This is the battery storage breakout session. Battery storage technology is evolving quickly, with costs for some technologies falling 80% in the past decade. Wisconsin solar companies are already integrating storage into certain projects, and critically important federal, regional, and state policies are actively being developed that will shape the market opportunity in Wisconsin. This panel will dive into what's happening right now, and what's coming next for the exciting technology of battery storage. The panel includes Steve Johnson of Convergence Energy, Keith Kalau of AllSky Energy, Thomas Mululi of Foley and Lardner, and the moderator is Eric Udelhoffen of One Energy Renewables.
We had the grant process for Innovative Energy. I think they awarded 31 grants. And we got one on behalf of Octopi. So their situation there is similar. They have a business case use that if they lose the power on that, and there was some conversation that they're kind of at the end of a feeder, and it kind of gets a little wanky on the end of that. And if they lose power in there, and he's got $250,000 worth of his brewing going on, and he loses it, it's $250,000 loss. So he wanted to mitigate that risk, as well as we'll be using that battery in the FR market when MISO allows the smaller batteries, which is likely later this year. So what we've done commercially is just the beginning, and it's all a big experiment on a lot of it. But we now have, you know, three projects solidly running and participating in these wholesale power markets with great returns on them. I should also mention that when sized properly, storage systems can take the ITC on those. You couldn't put up one solar panel and 2 megawatts of energy storage and take the 30% credit. But when you size it properly, there's private letter rulings from the IRS that allow you to take the ITC on the battery as well. So when you put all the tax advantages into it, you put the revenue streams into it, you put the savings into it, you can make batteries pencil today. So I think we're going to start to see a lot of it. I know that there's great interest at, you know, the PSC level and how this all works, I think as evidenced by the grants that have come forth. And just as we heard Mark speak in there, you know, this is the holy grail of renewables, is sorting out the storage side of it. So we've approached it from a behind-the-meter commercial side. And obviously there's going to be in front of it, you know, on the utility side. And there will be plays on the in the residential side too. And the last one is, you know, electric cars, which they're talking about down there. You can't forget that those things are rolling around the countryside, and they're parked in your garage. One of our software partners could monetize those assets across a wide, you know, geography and put those batteries into the market as well. So you're going to see a lot of this stuff happening. So that's how what we're doing currently and what we hope to do here more in Wisconsin.
Great. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Exciting intro. So I guess going over to Tom, I think there was a good segue there to some of the work that you're doing at the MISO scale. So if you wouldn't mind just introducing some of your background and maybe some of the ongoing rulemakings at MISO and how that might impact the storage market here in Wisconsin.
Sure, yeah. It's always worth it when we're thinking about storage and the electric industry to just, you know, remember that this is kind of a revolution in that, you know, up until storage was technically viable, systems had to be built that on an instantaneous basis, they could balance all the generation that had been previously built for whatever the peak was going to be, and then anticipate what was that peak going to be, so that they had the generation, and they being the utilities, the, you know, vertically integrated utilities, would have enough generation for that peak. The storage and the capabilities of storage begin to change that equation for the first time ever. So it really is the beginning of a revolution. It's fascinating what Steve, his company, is doing. So where are we at today? Storage originally, you know, 10 years ago at FERC, they're thinking, is it generation? Is it transmission? Because it does so much for the transmission system. And that was kind of where they were. And then they thought, well, we don't know. We're not going to solve that. Now I think they just say, well, storage is storage. 5, 8, 7 years ago, they said, okay, storage really has great capability to provide frequency regulation. So they made sure that as an ancillary service that could be bought and sold, that people could make money through providing that service to the grid. Then in last year, February, Order 841, FERC told all the RTOs, ISOs that, okay, you now have to level the playing field so that storage, and then they define exactly what storage is, so that storage can participate in the wholesale market. And one of the fascinating things, I think, for people in this room is that, as Steve was describing, it's an ability to get revenue that doesn't depend at all on your local utility, because you can bypass the whatever the local utility might be doing or might be trying to say or might be trying to prevent and deal directly with the wholesale market. So it's really an interesting thing. So just a couple of the details of what 841 does, and in particular what MISO is doing with it. So first, it required everybody to participate. They had to, storage has to be able to both set the price as a seller of electricity and a buyer of electricity. For the minimum size, each region could set its own minimum size as long as it was nothing higher than 100 kW. And then it also determined that sales, when a storage unit was going to be purchasing electricity from the grid in order to juice up the battery, it would be sold at wholesale prices, which is itself an interesting concept. So MISO then had this requirement from FERC that it adjust its tariff and make a filing to be sure that all the rules, that it was starting to implement the rules. It filed that December 3rd of last year, just a month ago or so. The comment date for that got extended. So now all the renewable organizations, as well as the big utilities, as well as all the stakeholders in MISO, they haven't yet weighed in on the proposal from MISO. Those comments are going to be due February 7th. This would be a more interesting conversation if I could tell you exactly what everybody is complaining about in it. There are a couple things that I'll point out that I think might draw some heat, because in particular the renewable industry and the storage industry, they know that the entrenched stakeholders in MISO processes have been there a long time, and they have their own view of the world and their own interests to protect. And it could be hidden deep in these requirements, things that end up, as Steve's company's out there trying to do things that, we didn't realize that was actually going to be the barrier, and maybe these guys put that barrier in from the beginning. So what has MISO done? They said first, for a definition of a electric storage resource, or ESR, that's the new term they'll be using, that it has to be a resource that's capable of receiving electricity from the grid and storing it for later injection back to the grid. And the first part of that is interesting for design purposes, and for if you're accompanying storage with solar, that you got to be sure the battery portion of it, the storage portion of it, can receive direct electricity directly from the grid and not just from your associated generation. In terms of location, it could be located either on the transmission system or the distribution system or behind the meter. Any one of those three places, and you can qualify as an ESR. You have to be able to comply with MISO's set point instructions. There could be all kinds of things there. I'll be interested to see if people say, oh, actually the set point instructions have these technical requirements that make it really hard for us, so you should adjust those. That might be an area of controversy. It has to have appropriate metering so that you can measure what's coming in, what's going out. And then it has to be physically located within the MISO footprint in order to participate in the MISO market. Another definitionary thing, they have a new term, an electric storage resource transaction, and that'll cover both charging and discharging. They distinguish that from end-use consumption. Electricity that goes into a storage unit will not be considered as load. It won't be increasing the peak. And then for a ESR, a storage resource itself, it'll need to communicate its commitment status to MISO on a routine basis. This would be made in an offer specifying whether the unit's available, whether it's not available, what particular services it might be able to provide, what its charge level is, what its discharge capabilities are, things like that. There's nothing in the rules that will require that every storage unit participate in the marketplace, so it's totally voluntary. But if you do want to participate in the wholesale market, you'd have to either sign an agreement and go through the credit worthiness stuff to be what's called a market participant in the marketplace, or you'd have to have somebody who is a market participant. And the way Steve was talking, it sounds like he's partnered with I think you referred to them as software companies, but with somebody who's a market participant who has the systems that can interact with MISO, it's a big deal. I think there's opportunities for market participants out there to sign up a bunch of new storage units, but we can get to that later. You also have to be able to qualify. You have to be able to just physically provide the product and meet the requirements for each product. And then you have to have, this is interesting and I think might be a controversy area, you must have, the way MISO describes it, you have to have the capability and the intention to withdraw electricity from the market. And I think that's interesting. The capability one we've talked about, but the intention is, I'm not sure how they're gonna, you know, in criminal law, it's really hard to measure intent. I'm not sure how they're gonna police that. So we'll see, keep an eye out for comments on that. So I think it's just some of the things projects should be thinking about. Talked about receiving electricity. We also need to think about who is it that controls the offer for if you're having a storage device, who's gonna collect the revenue. Again, Steve's got the model where they've got somebody else who's the market participant. The market participant is sharing some of what the revenues are with the host. That could work very well. And you have to think about is market participation as you're designing the project and implementing it, is the market participation part, is that gonna be simply an opportunity to lower things, or is it gonna be the main reason for the storage, or is it just a nice add-on? Any of those possibilities are there. Finally, just wanted to mention station power. That's been that's a term used for an electric generator that always has its own needs it consumes electricity, whether it's resting or a little bit while it's also generating. And there's been lots of legal stuff, both at FERC and all the way up to the Supreme Court, about whether that power is a retail sale of electricity because somebody's consuming it, or whether it's not a retail sale. And the determination here has been that that the power used to juice up the battery will not be a retail sale, that it's distinct from load. It will not be considered station power. I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being a new area of legal controversy as well. So that's kind of 841. I think, in timing-wise, it's March that they filed it. We'll see comments in February. Their plan, MISO's plan, is to have the tariff rules in place by December 2019 and then have the market open for participation in March 2020.
Great. Well, yeah, appreciate that. A lot of interesting stuff coming. In the Midwest, I think we a lot of times have the benefit of learning from the mistakes that others have made. So hopefully we'll do that in this case. So Keith, I would be really interested just to take it down to a very tangible level. And just if you wouldn't mind describing the motivation, kind of one of your recent installs that was a behind the meter storage and solar setup that was grid connected, and then same thing that's an off-grid setup, and just what the customer's motivations were and kind of how that process went and how that, you know, how the system's working for them now.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with the grid connected battery, which is a LG Chem, and this particular client was in a territory where the utility had changed the rate structure in such a way that if he wanted solar, it was really not very beneficial. So there was no net metering is what they kind of went to. And they would sell the power back, but it would be they're purchasing it at 10 cents, 10.5 actually. And then if they generated power, it would be at 3 cents. So it really made it hard for the economics to work out on that small system. It was only, I believe it was like 6,800 watts. And we saw a payback without a battery roughly being like, you know, 16 years in that situation. And really what drove that client to go with a battery was more to do with functionality. Because once you added the battery, you still had a payback of nearly 15 years. So it wasn't like the battery just kind of paid for itself in that scenario. But the added benefit was we put a dedicated loads panel in, and he's able to run his lights, his fridge, and some other his heating equipment, so that the house still kind of has the minimal operating things that he thought he wanted. So that scenario worked out really nice. And another motivation for a grid-connected battery, another job that we did, was just strictly backup. And in that situation, that client just wanted minimal things again, just like the previous. But he had a good rate structure, so he didn't need any type of self-consumption like the previous customer had. So just a backup-only situation, we used a AGM-type battery because it wouldn't be cycled as many times as the previous client. And then I guess I'd like to touch on the off-grid side. I guess there's two motivations we see as a company for people that want to go off completely off the grid or disconnect from the meter. And those two reasons would be changes in the rate structure. That's kind of what we're seeing quite a bit. The other reason would be the obvious. They're just too far away from the grid. It's 1,500 feet to get connected, and or it's, you know, $15,000 of trenching to get the service done. So those are the two main reasons we see it. Our most recent installation for off-grid, the client was actually, it was due to rate structure. So his whole, he was kind of a early adopter of solar technology. So he watched the rate structure change three times from the utility company. And that has a really profound effect on the relationship with the consumer and the utility company. And the utility company looks at it, you know, I hear a lot of different things, and usually it's never cost effective to go off grid, and it's never, you know, it never makes economic sense. And what's interesting about this client is it wasn't about economics. It was just strictly about he was done. And that's just a scenario that needs to be out there. And that relationship can be mended. There's ways of fixing that situation. And I think the grid-tied battery, like the LG Chem, that can interact and you can self-consume, and maybe the utility could offer an incentive for that type of battery technology that would kind of bring that situation, you know, would bring that client back in cooperation with the utility again. But we actually have two clients that did that. And so that motivation is a little surprising. And of course we have, in 2016, we decided that we were going to build an off-grid home, and we did so. And that it was our main motivation was to fully understand the challenges of it, and just live it. And understand what, if we're going to sell this to our clients, to make sure that we understand every facet of it. And we really did find a lot of positive things and a lot of negative things. But it's still, I'm a tinkerer by nature, so I wouldn't change it for anything.
Great. Well, that's a perfect segue. I've got two more quick questions, and then I want to open it up. To your point about ways that the relationship could have been mended with the utility, or ways that the utility could possibly have derived some benefit from a grid connected storage system, I'd just be interested to get any of your thoughts on ways that you've possibly seen utilities in other states work on that issue of having utilities derive benefit from storage that's customer sided, and then, you know, ideas for going forward that utilities can incorporate and reap some of the benefits that this new technology represents on a smaller scale. And then just to preview the next question I wanted to ask was about large-scale battery storage. I know there's been talk of and announcements about large-scale battery storage in conjunction with some of the large solar projects. So I'd be interested to hear Tom's thoughts on those and kind of where he sees the market for that going in the future. So I guess to the first question, I don't know if Steve, you have thoughts on that or kind of utility structure and benefits.
Well, you know, I think there was a great illustration across the hall earlier today when they were saying when you looked at Wisconsin, it was white. There was no storage here. There's a big vertical learning curve that's got to happen, both with starting with the utilities, I think, and the customer base. The utilities really don't understand what these assets can do, and they've never been tasked with having to understand what they can do, and there are benefits that they can see. We've started taking meetings with the different utilities and talked to them about that, and they're all, we have one right now that's sitting there going, this is pretty cool, because we have this system that we talked about with the Octopi, and we sat down with the utility, and what benefits do you think you could derive from this? And they're right now noodling it. They know what they know what we're going to do with it. But if they had that asset at their disposal, how could they work with their customer base and derive some sort of benefit from it? So from an engineering technology point of view, there are benefits, but it's going to take some time to have them understand them and let them, you know, play with it. As we talked about, you know, if you have, and our one of our software folks, their goal is to put distributed assets behind the meter across a broad geographic area, and their intent is to have a virtual power plant. And that virtual power plant is meaningful to a utility, and that's, you know, what Tom alluded to a bit ago there. So it's the early stages of it where, you know, one 500 kW array or a storage system might not be of a great benefit, but if there were 50, 60, 70 of those size batteries out there and you all of a sudden had a gigawatt of storage sitting there, and there's going to be a play for the utility, and it's just going to take time for them to understand what it might be. And if there's engineering-type questions as far as what those would be, I would point at my partner, John Kivlin, back there to discuss that after this.
I think in the case of the LG Chem battery or the Tesla Powerwall, which I haven't really been, as a company, haven't really been able to get our hands on one. But for now, the LG Chem battery being grid tied, self-consumption, and if it were to be programmed to inject into the grid when the utility, and then maybe the utility would control it for maybe an hour or two, it would inject power into the grid, and then that client would then receive an incentive for having that operable. And the scale of this could be just massive, because we're seeing more and more clients. I would say about a third of our clients are asking about batteries. And if there was an incentive in place, the utility company has an opportunity to have batteries spread out all over the place. Not, it'd be completely decentralized. It'd be, I would think that would be highly beneficial to the grid. That's why I'm optimistic that an incentive, I don't want to say the near future, but I think inevitably, I think it would be possible.
So when we think of utilities, you can think of it three different ways that they respond and do something. One is if there's a government mandate that they have to do something, like have to do storage, or there's it fits right within their wheelhouse and they can expand their rate base and make money, and so it's a system that they understand. Or third, it's a problem that's so thorny to work out under their traditional system that they have to look for unique ways to solve it. And storage could be the answer for any of those three situations. In California, there's a mandate that people have to do storage. And so they're the market leader. They're out there with RFPs for utility scale storage. Solar facilities out there are all being put in with storage. In New York, it's more of an example of thorny problems with the grid in Long Island, New York City, and so they are, because of that, they're incentivizing people to put in storage with their own systems, because it'll improve the grid and it's cheaper for them to do that than to build new transmission lines in that congested area, or to build new generations, very difficult. I'm not aware of any utility yet that has figured out a way that, oh, storage is the way we're going to build our rate base and going to make our rate payers and our executives happy, and we'll be able to, you know, get it through a PSC. So I think for Wisconsin, it's, I don't know when that point is going to come. I think all the utilities are thinking about it. We heard from Xcel this morning that, yeah, they're thinking about it. It sounds like Steve is working with people who are beginning to think about it. But I think with the opportunities in the wholesale market, you know, developers don't need to wait for the utilities to figure out how they're going to do it and why they're going to do it. I think over the next couple of years, it's going to be more developers saying, I see an angle here where we can solve a problem for a particular customer, and we can, you know, and maybe the wholesale market participation is going to be an opportunity. I heard from somebody this morning, and in, I don't know if she's in the audience, but she was working with a farm that had a biodigester, was running out, its PPA was running out, still wanted to keep the biodigester running. So she's thinking, well, is storage an answer? And I'm thinking, yeah, it is. That you could use that electricity to store, and then you can discharge it to either to offset the farm's electricity, or if it's over 100 kW, you could, you know, participate in the wholesale marketplace. And there's probably a business opportunity out there for somebody to put together a whole bunch of farms who used to have biodigesters, you know, just under PPAs, who would use that capability to for storage, and then would, the business case would be, we're going to participate in the wholesale market. Somebody out there will figure that out, and we'll make money out of it. And, you know, I don't think we should all just sit around waiting for the utilities to figure out what storage can do for their systems. I think as that happens, as growth happens, they'll start to recognize that, oh, it's a solution to some of their problems too. And then, you know, sort of like happening in the solar marketplace, there'll be all kinds of policy issues and divisions and, you know, interesting things happening.
I mean, storage is kind of, in some ways, it's like the hammer looking for a nail. I've heard other people describe it as the bacon of the grid, so it's got a lot of creative names. But if anyone has questions, I think now would be a great time to open it up. Yes, sir.
Two future related questions. I think they're connected, but number one, how do you see storage advancing in terms of cost per unit? Is it advancing rapidly now? Is it a good time to buy a storage system, or just wait till the price comes down and the quality improves? And related to that, as the storage technology becomes implemented, how much is that going to disrupt specifically something like a $500,000 or $500 million transmission line that they're proposing across Wisconsin? Does that become old technology instantly as the storage comes on, or does that serve a purpose with storage? Somewhat related.
I'll take the first part, Tom.
Bait and switch it over. He did say I could provide some free legal advice today. On the age and the, you know, the cost issue, we're the way our use cases are, we're seeing, and Tesla supports through power, their warranties, a 10-year life cycle. And those we always look at a storage and solar project as a 25-year project based on the panels are warranted for that time. So we always bake in, we're going to replace that battery. And right now we're putting in the cost of that storage replacement at about 50% in 10 years. Now, we're also seeing, you know, storage tracking, you know, solar and the drop in the cost. And it's going to be scale again. And how fast does it come, and then how fast does it drop? But we've already seen it, and we already have cases where we can, you know, monetize it today, you know, with the incentives, because as we know that, you know, the ITC is going to wind down, and in 5 years it'll be down. I think it drops and holds at 10%. So it's a pretty good time to consider storage when sized properly behind the meter with battery, because you can take that 30%. That's a big deal. So I think it's going to follow somewhat of the path that solar did. As it scales up, the cost is going to continue to drop. And 50% in 10 years is probably pretty conservative. Go Tom Go or Keith have
it? Oh, I got a little, yeah. What we're seeing is on the lithium ion batteries that are, I guess, on the off-grid side of things, or I guess they could be implemented in grid tight as well. Battery companies like Simplify, BMZ, and even the LG Chem battery, the direction we're seeing is that the batteries are, every time a new model comes out, it has a higher energy density, and it has gone down in price. So that's the direction we're seeing.
Yeah, and the pricing question, I agree. I think we've seen it in wind turbines and in solar, and we're seeing it in storage, that you could predict that that's the way it's headed. That doesn't mean don't buy now, because there might be the economic case now. And the second question, Cardinal Hickory Creek line, I think there are probably people who have incentives today to make sure that the engineers are studying those alternatives. I mean, in the end, it's an engineering answer that, you know, I'm not going to be able to provide. I could argue it either way if I had the studies in front of me, but I don't have the studies in front of me. But somebody's got to pay for the studies, and you know, that line, controversy over that line or other lines in Wisconsin, might provide the opportunity for those studies to be funded and done.
Yeah, and I'll just mention, I mean, we're not doing storage in the Midwest, but in other markets where we are developing storage projects, it's basically in situations where the alternative is a transmission investment that's pretty hefty. So it's solving a wires problem, typically. And that's where, I mean, a lot of situations around the country where that's the case, where there have been large battery systems. I saw Steve earlier, really. Yeah.
I was just going to ask, typically, what's the kilowatt hours payback that the battery's putting energy back in the system? I mean, is there some ballpark idea? Because I assume it's putting energy back at a peak load of time.
It's going to change. It's going to vary by utility.
Yeah,
because, I mean, as we all know, that's why solar doesn't just roar across the country, because it's different everywhere you go. And so we don't have capacity charges that we can break down and mitigate here, but we do in Illinois. You know, and when you're talking about a payback, when you add these storage assets to the solar project, it's going to, in many cases, it'll help. You know, we're seeing some of these projects, they're sub 5 years in a PJM market on the payback, including the storage and the solar side of it. Well, again, what's the use case? Are you talking about the wholesale market again for that battery revenue generation? Well, that's a market risk play. You know, it varies day to day. You know, in a polar vortex situation, you would see the hourly rate go up to $3,000 a megawatt hour on an ongoing basis. In Illinois, it trades at about, you know, it's right now in the $28 range per megawatt hour, and expected to be somewhere when MISO goes, is the estimates around $18. So it's going to be a little less here, but it, you know, the revenue will be there. And then if you've got, you know, suppliers that can interconnect with the ISO or RTO, you know, that's going to be a revenue share model that's negotiated.
I have a question about energy storage, hybrid model here in Wisconsin. So, yeah, a lot of your utility rate structures, you don't have a capacity cost, demand, you know, side of the equation related to how you determine your levelized cost of energy. So my question then becomes, you know, like here in Wisconsin, how, you know, are you just bringing it forward behind the meter related to energy resiliency and backup, and is that the rationale behind your customers deciding to integrate energy storage into their facility?
Every customer is different. They all have a different goal. One of our customers started with, I have my factory go down and I'm going to send home $55,000 worth of hourly workers. It's going to cost me per day. And if I send my front office home, it's $35,000 a day. Okay. So 85 in round numbers, he's going to send everybody home. He loses that productivity. Well, then the question was, how often does that happen? And I said, well, maybe a couple times every other year. That doesn't become a really good idea, but that's how things start. And then it becomes, what other cases can you do? And it's like a Swiss Army knife. You can pull out all kinds of different tools out of that same knife, that same tool, the product, and use it for different things. And that project actually went from, we want to back up our entire factory, to we're going to create revenue and we're going to create savings. So it changes, and it's really, it's part of the education of the marketplace right now as that goes. Now, if you look at other, there's other use cases where in our example earlier with the electronics company, their .com and their front sales office, they don't want to lose any revenue. That's a solid one. And there's other opportunities like plastic injection molders. Okay. If the grid goes down and their molds are full, we have one customer who lost $1 million in a weekend. That's a real quick decision to make.
Yeah.
And we've been talking to him since 2011, and that happened in November, so the phone rang in December.
But, I mean, whenever you're sizing out a battery, an industrial-sized, behind-the-meter battery system, and you're talking about a 500 kW with maybe a two-hour discharge,
yeah.
And then how are you going to bring that forward later on whenever the MISO market opens up? Are you then convincing the client that they're going to forego the resiliency and backup in order to participate in the wholesale market?
Well, again, these batteries, as Tom pointed out, you got to be able to inject and provide. And so we're running these batteries at a state of charge of somewhere in the 50 to 70% range at all times, so you can go either way. And again, it comes back to the customer question, what do you want it for? What's your primary use for that? If he says it's for backup, and we have a case where that is, we're going to run that battery at no less than a 70% state of charge that has been determined to cover their critical load during those power outage times. So it's again, a case-by-case determination. Because you have to have room on both sides, when you're, because that whole wholesale power market play is in little bursts, and it's constantly following the signal that comes from the operator. And so you have to be able to be at any point, and it's also a market risk revenue stream where you sign up today for tomorrow's activity. And so you discuss all these parameters, they're coded in, and then you go. And if it's a capacity event, all bets are off. There's nothing worth more than bringing the capacity charges to zero. You pull everything out of the market, even if there's penalties to be paid. You charge those batteries to full, and you dump it at that two-hour period. And you've created a real nifty little... we take anybody down there who wants to talk to this guy, and he's like, oh, wow, they hit all 10 days. And they had another provider that they had talked to that they hit five. They said, no, we got them all. But they didn't know that ComEd had capacity days. They thought just PJM did. And they couldn't figure out why they were getting billed, for capacity, and we figured that out pretty quickly. But it's the wild, wild west, but we've been at it now for 7 years. We pitched this first thing 7 years ago in March. And, we didn't sell one till 2 years ago, two and a half. But now, it's all starting to come. So to answer your question, I guess it's different for everybody, and it's different for all the utilities.
But here in Wisconsin, it's a totally different ball of wax.
Well, it is. Yeah. It remains to be seen how it's going to shake out. It remains to be seen what the market's going to pay, what that revenue is going to look like. And then you're going to want to find guys that really have a case use, I think. And then we got to get those utilities to figure out what the benefits are so that they can have happy customers that are all working together.
I think our time might be up, but I mean, are you guys willing to stay up here if people want to come and chat afterwards?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, can we get a round of applause for the panel?